Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news.
Hey, first up, we have LSP news. We have Lexical 0.6.0 was released. Lexical is one of the three LSPs, by the way, of Elixir, which is more than most, I'd say. Most language ecosystems only have like one. So it's nice that we have three to choose from. So just going to point that out. But here's what's new in 0.6.0, which is document and workspace symbols have been implemented. That's pretty nifty. That allows you to fuzzy find and jump around pretty quickly within the file, the document, or your workspace, which is your whole project. Symbols being things like functions and modules, that kind of thing. Also, they improved support for completions in Phoenix controllers, which is nice. They stopped completions inside strings, which I agree was pretty annoying. What are you completing in there? You know, you're going to write my string documentation stuff? I don't know. And then lastly, they improved indexing performance by, well, by one benchmark of one, you know, internet person's large code base by 3,600 times. That's quite a number.
It must have been pretty painful. Prior to that.
or it's just gotten that much better.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that looks like to be a good release. If you do use Lexical and you were on a previous version before, you might consider running the code action to have Lexical rebuild its search index so it can take advantage of that indexing performance increase. So there you go, Lexical 0.6.0. And I know we're looking forward to NextLS's update coming up. They're already hyping it. I just haven't seen it land yet. And Elixir LS, of course, is the big one. That's the one that's the most comprehensive.
OG.
Yeah, the OG. There it is. That's probably your most, I don't know, stable is the word that most folks would say. It kind of just depends. Not that it's unstable, but it's the most feature complete and comprehensive, when we put it that way. So if you're new to Elixir, probably go with that one. But if you're a pro, don't mind a little bit of instability while things are working out. Try out NextLS and Lexical. Eventually, there will be one true winner. And that will get to wear the crown. We'll see.
And next up, have you ever wanted to create an Elixir Slack bot? You know, I have at times thought that would be really cool, but I've never actually cared enough to actually go through with it and take the next step. But I thought it was cool. I saw Ben Reinhardt's recent blog post was about a piece of that whole process, which is verifying Slack requests in Phoenix. So the article gets you past that hurdle of verifying that an event notification coming into your app actually came from Slack. So it's cryptographically verifying the sender so that someone can't just trigger your Slack bot to do things if they know where it is publicly accessible on the internet. Anyway, just thought I'd pass that along, thought it was cool. And if someone wants to actually write the whole template for an Elixir Slack bot, maybe then I would actually, you know, go for the whole process of doing it. But always thought it'd be cool. Never actually went that far. Have you ever created a Slack bot, David?
Everywhere I've been, they've already implemented it. And I've added like hooks to it, but never from scratch. But yeah, like the nature of any webhook deal, like I've done this Stripe ones, for example, from scratch. And they always run into the same problem of the endpoint and the router, like the order of which the request is processed to do the verification stuff. You typically have to do it further up the stack. And that's where things get a little bit weird, or not weird, but like it's not a regular controller action where you want all your code to be organized. You have to kind of separate it into like a plug that goes up further up the chain. And then it travels down to your controller. And that's the weird part that this article goes through. All right, next up, a good friend, Peter Ulrich, has launched a new live view oriented course on building forms. Forms, the lovely necessary evil of all web content. I'm joking, but forms can be kind of complex, and it is kind of like the crux of how, you know, interact with your users, some sort of forms. Peter now has a video course that's published online. It's about, it's 50 euros, which equates to about $53. Today, I learned that the USD and euro conversion is quite close. I used to think that it was a lot further apart, not anymore. So good to know. As part of this course, this is the outline of it. So first, he goes over schemaless change sets. I appreciate that. That's a really good inclusion there. Embedded schemas, schema change sets. So schema change sets being ones that are database backed. Schema-less being ones that are not database-backed. Then we also have dynamic form fields and nested form fields. Oof, that nested one does get kind of dicey down there. So if you're looking to sharpen your knowledge around how to do Phoenix and forms, which everybody ultimately has to run into if they're doing any web app, you know, 50 euros, not that expensive. I think that would be worth it. Looks like he's done a lot of work polishing this up and did a good job explaining it. It's not terribly long either. So it's not like this is a 6-month course that you have to go through, you know? So the time commitment seems just about right. So go give that course a look-see and see if that is helpful for you. And I'm looking forward to hearing public feedback about that course too.
And next up, a new post by Michael Lubas on the Paraxial.io website was highlighting Paraxial's security focused support for LiveView. I thought this was interesting because he was just highlighting some specific security concerns around LiveViews, which is interesting because LiveViews do operate differently than a traditional like REST API or something like that with just traditional posts. Just to hit a couple points on here, it includes initial connection spam detection and protection for LiveView to identify malicious users opening many LiveViews. Especially if it's a large live view, it could consume a lot of resources. That could be possibly like a denial of service if they just get your machine to take up too much memory. Or maybe they're trying to just brute force break into something by running a lot of variation attacks or something. Related protection for the live view was WebSocket connection spam. That's the idea of they open up a single WebSocket, and then because they have that WebSocket open, they can just spam a whole bunch of malicious requests over that one connection. So it also able to detect that. Also highlighted with this post was that about a year ago, there was some work on Sobolo for the cross-site scripting security check. I should just mention Sobolo is a security-focused static analysis for Phoenix framework, but previously it was not able to actually check live views. It just didn't have the code. It wasn't actually looking at those templates. So I really appreciate his attention and focus on live view because that is the interface I prefer to use, right? Like I prefer to create live views than, you know, as Chris McCord calls them, dead views. That's my go-to. And so I just like and appreciate that, hey, we got some security focused handling and consideration there. So good to see. Fly.io. It's a great place to run Elixir apps. With many global regions, a private network that makes it easy to cluster your app, and a powerful CLI, it's something you should really try out. Experience it for yourself at fly.io.
All right, next up, we're just going to celebrate a little bit. 5 years ago, there was a particular talk released that went wild. This talk had a profound effect, I think, on the public perception on Elixir and Erlang. This, of course, you're probably already thinking of the title I'm talking about, is Sasha Urich's Soul of Erlang and Elixir talk. It's been 5 years since that talk went public. He delivered that talk at a conference. It was really well received. It illustrates the power of really the Beam altogether. He's using Elixir there to illustrate that. And I can't stop recommending, even 5 years, you know, old, it's still highly relevant. It really gets to the crux of what makes the Beam so appealing. It's a lot of staying power, still really relevant today. So if you haven't seen it before and people keep on badgering you to watch it, you should go watch it. It is well worth the 42 minutes that this is. This talk was given at the GoTo conference in 2019 in Chicago. Good old Chicago. Anyway, it's a legendary talk. Happy that it's still relevant, still pushing it to folks. Happy 5 years to that talk, and congrats, Sasha Urich. I believe you will be getting some well-deserved praise right around now because as people are remembering it. Looking forward to all the other great talks that you're giving.
And next up, ElixirConf EU has concluded. We haven't seen any of the videos yet from that, but it sounds like it was a great success. Following that successful conference, they've already started planning for ElixirConf EU 2025. So the location and dates have been announced. You can't sign up yet, but you can sign up for their wait list to be notified with news and announcements as those become available. Got a link in the show notes to where you can get that. But in short, it will be May 15th and 16th, 2025 in Krakow, Poland, and it will be virtual as well. So in physical and virtual.
All right. Well, I know that Krakow has a lot of like incredible Elixir engineers there. I'm not going to commit to it, but in my mind, in my heart of hearts, I really want to go to that one. I'm gonna fly across the world to go to that one. Saying it here. I'm gonna be disappointed in myself if I can't make it. Okay, that rounds up all of our Elixir news, but there is one like industry piece of news that was pretty interesting. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, has made a ruling that impacts the U.S. technology workers in particular. The piece of news is that a non-compete employment clauses, they're rendered ineffective, right? Honestly, I did not realize that the FTC had that kind of power, but happy to hear it, I guess. A non-compete clause specifies that an employee must not enter into competition with an employer after the employment period is over. So that means, I don't know, I'll make up a scenario. If you're working at Amazon and then you stop working at Amazon, you can't go and create an Amazon competitor because it implies that you have business secrets and you're going to use that against them. That's the whole purpose, right? Over time, I'm sure these non-competes have been kind of, I don't know how to say it other than just anti-worker, anti-competitive, maybe. It's kind of in the name. But that's the purpose of that, is that they want to limit that risk of getting company secrets outside of the company. This is a quote from them. The goal is that non-compete clauses keep wages low, they suppress new ideas, and they rob the American economy of dynamism, including from the more than 8,500 new startups that would be created a year once non-competes are banned. So they've got numbers attached to this. We'll see what happens.
Well, those are projected, right? Like, right? They are saying, hey, if people could actually leave their current job and go into some type of competitive relationship with their current employer, we believe there would be like 8,500 new startups.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, we'll have to see what actually happens. You know, is there going to be this burst of new competition? I don't know.
Honestly, when I first saw this, I saw NDA. I guess that's exactly my point. I even misspoke it. So I saw this and I saw non-compete employment and I read NDA. And I was like, whoa, that's huge. So tell me the difference here. Like, what is this not?
Yeah. So, you know, you might think, oh, no, this means I could be working at Amazon. I could, like, you gave Amazon as an example, right? Or let's just say, like, some of the big companies, right? You got, like, Meta, like, Facebook kind of thing, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google. You know, like, that's FANG, right? That's what people talk about. Say these big, prominent American tech companies. And so you imagine that I couldn't be working at Amazon. I get some brilliant idea because of access to information that I have, or I have access to code even, and then I want to go create a competitor. It's like, that's still illegal. Taking trade secrets or having access to code that's like copyrighted and owned by the company, like, you still can't take that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Existing trade secret laws and non-disclosure agreements still protect employers. However, they will no longer be able to bar a worker from leaving to go to a competitor. So, like, what was happening is you had these big tech companies, and they're all, like, sometimes even physically close to each other, and they would be just poaching each other's employees, like, they top talent. And it's like, well, you've already vetted this person. They're a good person. I just want them over here. But the big companies kind of agreed with each other to not take each other's talent because it was just driving prices and wages up. So that becomes non-competitive. And I think that's what the FTC is coming after, saying, hey, you can't actually do that. You can't prevent them from moving over. Like, they're not breaking any rules or laws. They just can't work for you because you're a competitor.
The non-competes were about implied trade secrets, right? They were really stretching there. It's not that they do have or are using those company secrets. It's that they're going to even eliminate your ability to even tempt to go over to a different company. And you said the FANG companies. Now, it's easy to think of a very limited scenario where it's like, I am this business, I sell coffee tables. You know, I don't want another coffee table business to take my woodworking secrets, right? Okay, very limited in scope. But when we're talking about these FANG companies, they do anything and everything.
Yes.
You know, like, Meta's in everything. They're social media, that's what they're known for, but they're also a marketplace. So they compete in a way with Amazon, which competes in a way with, you know, all these other big companies. Like,
there's Oculus with virtual reality or augmented reality. You can't do, yeah, it's like you can't go anywhere.
They're everywhere. Yeah, they do everything. And so You just can't eliminate everything off the it was just too much. We'll see how this plays out. I think this is good news, though.
There was interesting, though. There was a little carve-out, right? Like, this little exception that was in there. It's like, I wonder why. What is this trying to stop? But it said, existing non-competes with senior executives will remain in force. And they define a senior executive as workers earning more than $151,164 annually. It's a very specific number. I wonder how they came up with that number. That they can't make more than that annually and who are in policy-making decisions. I think what it is they have these existing companies and they said, please, please just put this carve out because we're going to have all of our leadership teams leave because our company is so awful to work for. And I think that's probably what they're fearing. What this does, though, is it says new senior executives are not going to be able to have these non-competes applied to them, but they kind of grandfathered it in for existing ones.
Is that a union? Is it like workers that earn more than 151 and additional to, you know, another group of people who are in policy making decisions?
I think it's a both. That's the way I read it.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to be making at least this much money and be in a policy making position.
The Silicon Valley annual payouts, though, like they're above that number for the most part. This is kind of funny. I love it, though. We'll see what happens. I love that number, 151,164. Like, what? It's just... like they're looking at all their existing salaries and they're just like picking a line and it's like, this fellow right here, Bob Smith, this is our lowest bar. We cannot let this guy, you know, like, so they drew it like right under like Price is Right style, like right under his salary. He gets paid 151,165. You just missed it, you know, like.
And so like none of this really applies to any of our friends out there who are not under U.S. working laws. So it doesn't apply to you. But, you know, I do know there's still a lot of people like in Europe and everywhere who work for a U.S. company still. But these laws didn't apply to them directly anyway. So I realize this is not everyone's interest. But when I first heard this, my first thought was I had worked for a company where it was just bad news, right? So there's this company and a whole bunch of their engineering team just got all mad and they up and left and created a direct competitor, but they took all the code too.
Oh.
Yes. And then like immediately stand up a competitor. And there was a lawsuit, of course, but I think really what they got them on was that they were taking company secrets. And so there's a settlement and everything, but it wasn't non-competes that they were really, it kind of like they violated everything. So they were bad. But I think a lot of the protections for the company still were about the NDAs and the trade secrets is where they really got it. Not about being necessarily a non-compete. So really, it's like if you're at a company, you want to be able to move to a competitor. It's like, I need a job. I just got to have a job. And you're not bringing any secrets with you. It's like, now that becomes more of an option.
Mm-hmm.
Just one other note is, it says it's going to take 120 days from the time it is posted to the Federal Register. And I don't know when that is, if that's already happened. So it's not an immediately, boom, this is in effect right now. So there's a little bit of time perhaps before we see any real impact happen. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.